I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Welcome to Scuderia F1, the podcast that's always up to speed with the latest Formula One news. Follow us on Twitter at Scuderia F1 Pod and subscribe to the show on iTunes and Stitcher. Now, here are your hosts, Mark Daly and Kevin Laramie.
Hey everybody, what is up? Welcome to the podcast that is always up to speed with Formula One here on the Overtime Media Network. Mark Daly here, hanging out once again in the Vivid Seat studio. We're going to talk about the Italian Grand Prix. We're going to talk about Charles Leclerc. We're going to talk about a whole lot of things today on the show. And what a hell of a race that was at Monza last weekend. Exciting, exciting stuff right from the moments the lights went green right to the checkered flag. So much action on and off the track, really. It was a race, I think, that was, I think it defined what was probably a lot of the best and the worst of Formula One, depending on your point of view. And Charles Leclerc and Sebastian Vettel and Ferrari, can we just get it out there right now? That was a statement race by Charles Leclerc. Now winning two races back-to-back, weekend to weekend, first at Spa-Francorchamps 2 weeks ago, and then at Italy, following it up at Ferrari's home race, winning at Monza for the first time since 2010 and doing it in impressive fashion. And again, Sebastian Vettel has a moment going off of the track, and that was a race that Sebastian had the pace to win, and it was a little bit mixed up because of the bizarre that happened in Q3 in qualifying, and we'll talk about that in a moment, but I think what we saw there was a changing of the guard. Sebastian has been the benefactor of being the number one driver, but we've seen the signs from Charles Leclerc all season long. He should have gotten his first race win way back at race number two in Bahrain, but was robbed by that unfortunate mechanical issue that he had with the engine late in the race. And it took a long time to get that race win at Spa-Francorchamps, and he followed it up in amazing fashion. But it wasn't without controversy. Charles definitely going right up to that invisible line in the sand as to what is fair and what is not fair, or dirty racing, really, well, pun intended here, pushing the envelope as to what was acceptable and getting the black and white flag for the his antics, pushing Lewis Hamilton a little wide, and Charles admitting he went right up to the limit. And well, depending on your point of view, if you're pro Hamilton, pro Mercedes, you'll probably say that Charles went right up to the line and crossed clearly over it. If you're more of a Ferrari fan and a Charles Leclerc fan, you'll probably be erring on the other side that Charles went up to the other side, maybe played in the little gray area of as to what is acceptable and what isn't, but stayed well inside of what was fair racing. Anyways, let's talk first. Let's go over the race order at the final classification, P1 to 10, starting with Charles Leclerc, second race win for Ferrari, second career win. Came home just under a second ahead of Valtteri Bottas. Lewis Hamilton finishing third, 35 seconds behind, of course, going in for a late pit stop to change tires. And fourth and fifth, Danny Ricciardo and Nico Hülkenberg in the best race for Renault by far this season. Alex Albon in P6 for the Red Bull. Sergio Perez, seventh for the Racing Point. Eighth, Max Verstappen, after starting way at the back of the grid, managed to get all the way back up into eighth. Antonio Giovinazzi, ninth for Alfa Romeo, and Lando Norris rounding out the top 10 for McLaren. And looking now at the standings on the driver's side, Lewis only managing a P3 means that he didn't really pull away too much in the championship. 284 points, which is still miles ahead of everyone else, including his teammate Valtteri Bottas, second in the world championship with 221 points. Max Verstappen, third in the world championship, just 3 points ahead of Charles Leclerc. Max on 185, Charles with 182. Sebastian Vettel has now dropped down to fifth fifth in the world championship with 169 points. Pierre Gasly is sixth. Carlos Sainz, seventh. Danny Ricciardo, eighth. Alex Albon, ninth. And Danny Kvyat for Toro Rosso, rounding out the top 10. And he has a mere 33 points, but not bad for a Toro Rosso driver. And going now quickly to the Constructors' Championship. Mercedes way out in front, of course, 505 points. Ferrari, 351. Red Bull, 266 for a third in the Constructors. McLaren, Renault, 83 points. But with the fourth and fifth last weekend for Renault, they are now have 65 points in the Constructors, which is good enough for fifth. So they're starting to close in a little bit on McLaren because Carlos Sainz had a DNF at Monza, and Lando only bringing home a single point for P10. And then that's it. That is the top five. And well, let's just for the hell of it, let's just go down through the rest of the constructors. There's only five more teams after all. Toro Rosso, sixth. Racing Point, seventh. Alfa Romeo, eighth. Haas is ninth. And then Williams Mercedes, 10th in the world championship on the constructor side with one world championship point after a whole lot of races raced in 2019. But wow, that was an exciting race, but it was controversial, not just in the race itself, also going back to Q3, and that was about the weirdest qualifying session I think I've ever seen. Q1, Q2, pretty much standard fare, what you would expect to see anytime during a qualifying session. But it was strange when it came down to the final run of the day in the top 10 shootout with everything still to play for. And I know that there is a lot of mind games, there's a lot of strategy that goes on, and a lot of thought goes into it from the guys up on the pit wall, but you didn't have to be a Formula One genius to take a look at the amount of time that was left in Q3 on the clock and just how much time they needed to get out of the pits onto the track and get around and cross start finish with time to spare to put in that hot lap. And they just didn't manage to do it. And we were watching at the time and commenting just among ourselves as sitting at home here in Vancouver, Canada, that it just didn't look like they were going to be able to do it. But it did end up in a little bit of, let's just face it, Nico Hülkenberg, Carlos Sainz, and Lance Stroll were the naughty ones in that one. And I know it all comes down to jockeying for position, and nobody wants to be the first car out, and especially around a power track like Monza, you want to get the benefit of getting behind a car into the slipstream and get a tow. It really does make a difference on a track like that, but it was bizarre just how they came out of the pits into the first chicane at Redofilio, and they really didn't go anywhere. And all of a sudden, the reality of the situation kind of kicked in, and everybody decided to floor it. But by that time, it was just way too late. They weren't going to make it around basically three quarters of the track in time to get around before time expired. And it ended the way that it did. And they were reprimanded for driving unnecessarily, stewards. And the race stewards, headed by Michael Massey, have asked the FIA to find ways to avoid a repeat scenario in the future. I mean, of course, it is strategy, but it just is a bad look for Formula One. It makes it look bush. It makes it look silly. And certainly, I hope that it's something that we don't we don't see again anytime soon. But it was, like I say, it was bizarre. And by the time it was all said and done, it was Charles Leclerc who came out claimed pole position with a Q3 time of 119.307. Not too bad, about 3.5 tenths ahead of, 3.5 hundredths ahead of Lewis Hamilton, who set a Q3 time of 119.346, which is very, very narrow gap to his teammate Valtteri Bottas, who set a time of 119.354, and Sebastian Vettel, he had set a time of 119.457. So, I mean, they were all pretty close, the top four cars, and it was just unfortunate. I'm pretty sure Sebastian Vettel and Lewis Hamilton, well, I think any one of those four cars in the top four, the Ferrari or the Mercedes cars, reckon that they could have improved on their time. So they were all justifiably annoyed. But again, in the Q3, outside of the top four, we had Danny Ricciardo and Nico Hülkenberg in the pair of Renaults, fifth and sixth on the grid. Carlos Sainz, seventh. Alex Albon, eighth. Lance Stroll, Lance, who didn't make it out of Q1 for, what was it, about 15 races in a row or something like that. He managed to get all the way up to P9, and of course was one of the transgressors in that business at the end there. And Kimi Raikkonen ended up in 10th, ended up starting from the pit lane after crashing out and having to change his gearbox. So that was a little bit unfortunate. I mean, his teammate Antonio Giovinazzi was 11th, so not a bad qualifying for the Alphas, although Raikkonen suffering from some other issues there. But it was frustrating to see the race or the qualifying end that it did, but it is what it is, and it was what it was. Charles claiming pole position again and was in a strong position to take that start that race. I mean, pole position not necessarily guarantee or a victory around a track like Monza, but certainly set him up very nicely. And then there were plenty of things that came out post-race, including Charles Leclerc saying, "Verstappen lesson helped me beat Hamilton." And this is an article from motorsport.com. And if you'll remember, at turn three at the Red Bull Ring at the Austrian Grand Prix a couple of months ago, it was a hard-charging Max Verstappen who muscled his way past Charles Leclerc and forced his way through there. It was a bit dodgy. It was aggressive. It was on the line. I mean, if people were saying Charles is carrying on, or tactics, whatever you want to call it, his manner behind the wheel and defending his lead from the likes of Lewis Hamilton and Valtteri Bottas, especially against Lewis, if some of the things that he was doing were being called into question by people, then certainly Max's barging through should be considered in much the same light. But be that as it may, Charles did say that he learned something after that, and he said, and I quote, "Since Austria is clear, we can go a bit further in the way we defend and overtake, and it's just the aggressiveness of us drivers. I believe that Austria helped me change the approach, and today it's also thanks to this that I managed to win. It was obviously very much on the limit, but I'm happy to race like this." And I think that is it's a good point. We saw that example from Michael Schumacher over the years, just how far he was willing to go and what he thought was necessary to win races. And I'm not comparing Charles Leclerc and Michael Schumacher head to head. I mean, we're a long ways from that. But the thing is, you have to be a little bit ruthless. You have to maybe dive into these gray areas and maybe do things that are going to upset some people. And Lewis very upset about some of the things that Charles Leclerc was doing on Sunday afternoon. But like I say, I think it's really open for interpretation. Certainly when they went into the chicane at that one point when Lewis was all over the backs of Charles's gearbox. And it was interesting how the two cars differed in various parts of the track, and how at certain times Lewis would be able to get a good toe and close up and get really close and look like he'd be able to make an attempt to try and pass Charles Leclerc. But then just at other parts of the circus, even with the DRS, the Ferrari, the straight line speed, especially down the start-finish straight, was absolutely impressive. You could just tell from the in-car camera that Lewis or Valtteri Bottas, whoever it might have been, whoever was behind Charles Leclerc, was just not gaining an inch on him. And you could just tell, even though the commentators kind of played it up again, here comes Lewis, here comes Valtteri, here comes whoever, that when you just looked at it, especially when they went into the chicane at turn one, that the distance was just too great. They weren't going to outbreak themselves or outbreak Charles Leclerc and dive up the inside in some sort of Danny Ricciardo type of overtaking. But it was very interesting to see. But especially when they got to the chicane there, about a third of the way around the track, you could see, and I didn't really pick up on it too much at the time. I mean, I was a little bit caught up in the moment, to be quite honest. And I say, well, you know, why did Charles get the black and white flag? I thought he did okay. I mean, but what he did, and if you watch the replay again, he definitely moves over. He's kind of a little bit in the middle of the track, but as they go towards the corner of that chicane, you can see Charles starting to drift somewhat slowly and somewhat sneakily towards the outside of the track, leaving Lewis not much room and forcing him to go off of the track and take that escape road and then come back around to rejoin the track. And certainly, I guess hindsight is 2020, and it's one thing to say after the race, after maybe it's a little bit controversial, and Charles Leclerc might say, oh yeah, I knew what I was doing. I know it was right on the limit. I know what where that is. Perhaps that that's true, but also it's an easy way to maybe kind of back up and defend your position or your reasoning behind it to do what you did. But certainly it was a lot more subtle than, say, I wouldn't say the Verstappen chop, because it wasn't really a chop, but I mean, they did come up with some of these rules because Max, a couple of years ago, it was very pronounced what he was doing. He would make that one defensive maneuver that he's allowed to make, but under braking, he would pull over to one side of the track, and it would be a lot more pronounced, a lot more obvious than what Charles Leclerc did. And then Charles again, he was also accused by Lewis by being going a little bit too slow at one point, and then again, he outbraked himself into turn one and had to take that little escape road there, and Lewis was all over that as well. So, I mean, the thing is, it was a great battle to watch, and I'll be honest, and I don't think this is it should become as too much of a shocker. I'm getting tired of watching Lewis Hamilton win, and I'll explain why after the short break here on the Overtime Media Network, after we hear a short word from our sponsor, so don't go away. We'll be right back in just a moment. Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
All right, welcome back to Scuderia F1 here on the Overtime Media Network. Mark Daly hanging out once again in the Vivid Seat studio talking about the Italian Grand Prix. And yes, I know it's a shocker that my admission just before the break there that I'm tired of watching Lewis Hamilton win. I don't have anything against Lewis. He's one of the best Grand Prix drivers ever, and he's not slowing down at the age. I mean, he's not old. I mean, he's only in his early 30s. I mean, I'm not going to go down there. I mean, if he's old, then I'm downright ancient, and I'm not really all that old, at least by my own reckoning. But the point is, Lewis is a great driver, obviously one of the best ever. He's the best driver in Formula One at the moment, and he has been for a very, very long time. But since 2014, and watching Mercedes win each and every week, more or less, and winning championship after a championship, it does get a little bit monotonous, and it is refreshing to see other drivers getting their chance. I mean, there's been plenty of other drivers who've won races since we introduced the V6 turbo hybrid engines. It hasn't been all their way, but I mean, most of the races, or the majority of the time, it is Mercedes that have come out on top. But the thing is, I wouldn't have minded, even from my perspective and my preferences, I would have been perfectly happy to watch Lewis Hamilton win that race, because it was a great scrap that was going on between them. Two really, really good racing drivers going at it. And even though it got a little bit questionable, you know, Charles, like I say, playing in that gray area as to what is fair and what isn't in defending his lead there. But still, it was fun to watch. I mean, Lewis, you know he's going to go at it. He's going to race as hard as he can, and he's going to do whatever it takes to get around the car. And I mean, he tried. He did everything he could to get around Charles Leclerc, but just the benefit that the Ferrari had on some of those certain sections of the track, that straight line speed was just the advantage that he needed. And ultimately, Lewis paid for it because he wasn't able to capitalize on the advantage he maybe had over Charles Leclerc when his tires were fresher, because you have to remember, after they changed the tires at the first pit stop, Lewis went out on medium tires, Charles went out on the hard tires, and still the performance between them, I mean, even though he was on the hardest compound tires, Charles Leclerc was still very, very quick compared to Lewis Hamilton. And it was a gamble that that really paid off. And, well, I don't know if it was a gamble, but it was certainly a strategy that worked very well for them. And you just knew that when he came out of the pits, just a couple of car lengths in front of Lewis, that his immediate opportunity, his best window, was going to be in the that very short period of time after Charles came out from the pits. And as it took more time to warm and get those hard tires up to the proper temperature and get the grip that he needed. But at the end of it, he wasn't able to do it. And then, of course, over time, the tires began to degrade, and Lewis just wasn't able to stick with it. And his tires were looking quite angry, looking quite blistered on that right front at one point. And he was forced to make a pit stop late in the race. I mean, sure, Lewis doesn't really need the extra insurance or added comfort or buffer of getting that extra point for getting the fastest lap of the race. But Lewis is going to have to, he'll do whatever he takes to get points wherever he can get them. So, I mean, that wasn't a big surprise. But what I did find surprising was that that Valtteri Bottas, who did have fresher tires than Charles Leclerc, still wasn't able to really make a good go at him. And Toto Wolff, team principal of Mercedes, said it really kind of brought to light the fact that Valtteri Bottas maybe is not quite the best driver when following in the aero wake behind a car in front of him. And it looked like he was going to have a couple of laps right at the very end there when he would have an opportunity to challenge himself for the lead. And he had a couple of little looks. And then, unfortunately, for Valtteri, he just he boggled it up a little bit right at the end of the straightaway going into turn one. And much like many other people, I mean, he wasn't the only person, so it's not completely fair to single him out for that. But he did get his braking a little bit wrong, and he went too deep into that corner. And that just gave Charles a little bit of an added buffer and a little bit of extra comfort. Because, I mean, if that lap or that race goes another couple laps, maybe he gets around him. Maybe he gets that victory after all. But last Sunday, he didn't in the time that he had. And that one tiny little error, which just, cost or gave Charles a second or whatever it was just enough, even though Valtteri was able to close it up and finish the race just a second behind him. But I think for me, one of the most important or one of the most crucial things that was such a statement from Charles Leclerc was the fact, not that obviously it was the way that he won the race, but he did it largely on his own because he didn't have the benefit of having Sebastian Vettel, his teammate there, to help him out and maybe run a little bit of interference. I mean, Sebastian, I mean, let's just be fair. I mean, he is a bit of a support driver at this point in time. And I just get the feeling now that that his position of privilege within Ferrari, within the team, is no longer what it once was. I mean, Charles has proven in his first season with Ferrari, his second in Formula One, that he's up for it. He's up for the task, and he knows what it takes to win races, and he's quite capable of doing so, and doing it in the way that needs to be done. But I think that is it's really, really crucial, because I mean, he had to absorb a lot of pressure over a lot of the race. Let's just be fair. I mean, he basically was under pressure from Lewis Hamilton or Valtteri Bottas the entire length of that Grand Prix, because Sebastian Vettel spinning out early in the race while running fourth, and it could have been he would have been stuck behind the two Mercedes car. Maybe he wasn't. Maybe he gets in front of them at the pit stops, whatever it might have been. But at least let's go from the hypothetical stance that, okay, let's say we had a Ferrari front row lockout on to start this race rather than first and fourth because of the botched Q3 session. But he would have had that benefit really to take a lot of pressure off Charles Leclerc by maybe just running a little bit slower and then having the benefit of just being able to open up that gap between himself and the following Mercedes cars, while Charles slowly builds up a bit of a buffer, a little bit of insurance between himself and the Mercedes cars behind him. But he didn't have that because Sebastian Vettel, and once again, losing the car and going off. And, what do you say at this point? What do you say at this point? And I've been accused by some people that listen to this show over time for being a hater of Sebastian Vettel. And that is not the case. I've got a great deal of respect for Sebastian Vettel. He is a four-time world champion. He's won a lot of races. I mean, hasn't won a race now in over a year, which is quite frankly surprising. But when you see how, unfortunately, he's struggled and some of the problems that he's had and some of the problems that, are a fault of the team and the strategy and the way that they wanted to do things, or, go back to Monza last year, for example, and it would have been of more benefit to give Sebastian the tow rather than Kimi Raikkonen in Q3, and that really affected what happened and really led to or put Sebastian in that Vettel in the position to tangle with Lewis Hamilton on that opening lap. But there are so many instances of that now, and he has one more year at Ferrari, and I have to believe now, based on what we've seen over the past year now, that I can't see Sebastian Vettel coming back to Ferrari after his current contract expires at the end of next year. Maybe he will. Maybe they'll figure something out. Maybe he's willing to take a reduced role in the team and be a support driver. I can't really see it. I mean, if you're a four-time world champion, I mean, he's only 32. I mean, in theory, I mean, he's got a lot of life left in his racing career in Formula One. I mean, it's not really what I would consider a retirement age driver by any means. I mean, I look at Kimi Raikkonen. I'm still not convinced that Kimi's retirement age, but I mean, he knows when he's ready to hang him up, and that's why Kimi Raikkonen has said that, he's done at the end of 2020. But the thing is, I just don't know what's going to happen to Sebastian Vettel. I mean, the way that things are going, unless he finds a way to really bump the slump here in the remaining 8 races of the season or whatever it is in 2019 and get onto some, I guess, what's the best way to say it? Some form of his the form of Sebastian Vettel that we've been used to seeing over the past several seasons, and really come back and bounce back for the remainder of this year, or at least for next year. I don't know how they could really bring him back. I mean, I guess money depends on a lot of it, I guess, too, are the options that they have. I mean, Charles isn't going anywhere. Charles Leclerc is obviously the rock star that Ferrari need. He's the driver that really looks like he's going to be able to win races for them. And where that leaves Sebastian Vettel is a great, great question. And I really don't know what's going to happen to him after next year. And, well, where does he go? I mean, and who would replace him at Ferrari if he was to go? I mean, would Sebastian, after being a four-time world champion with Red Bull, then going to Ferrari and not being able to live up, as of yet, to the dream of winning a world championship for the Scuderia while he's there, and help maybe reestablishing the glory days that the team saw, 20 years ago at the beginning of the 2000s. That's a great question. I really have to think that the window, although it may not be completely closed, there still might be a little crack open. I think his window for success at Ferrari has sadly come and gone. I mean, he might get the odd race win here or there, but I don't know. But the big question is that if Sebastian Vettel were to not come back to Ferrari in 2021, who would they bring? Who would go in and fill that seat beside Charles Leclerc? Do you, you know, drive a truckload of money up to Max Verstappen's house and you know, try and get him there? I mean, how cool of you know, like, what a lineup would that be between Max Verstappen and Charles Leclerc Ferrari? Or does that have the potential to be, you know, a disaster in the making, become something that would just have become too potent? I mean, I'm thinking a little bit along the lines of, you know, Rosberg and Lewis Hamilton. I mean, how bad that relationship is. I mean, even in Ferrari, I mean, where it's one of the biggest, most successful teams in Formula One, would there be enough room for Charles Leclerc and for Max Verstappen? And who do you tell is one, you know, the number one, and who's number team or two in that team of drivers? I mean, that's a tough, tough call, but... You know, the other surprising thing is about, you know, Sebastian Vettel, is that he is now just 3 points off a one-race ban. And that is, again, another mind-boggling thing, that just all the, you know, misadventures that this guy has had over the past year or so, is he's been racking up the points. And because it wasn't a good look for him, obviously, to spin out the way that he did, going through the Ascari curve there, right before the very long straightaway at the back of the track before they go into Parabolica. And he says he didn't see Lance Stroll. And, you know, there is a very, you know, good chance, what with the hands device, what with the halo, what with, you know, the driver sitting very low in the cockpit. So, I mean, maybe the team has to, you know, own a little bit of that as well. And, you know, somebody should have been on the radio saying, you know, supporting him and telling him, okay, well, you know, maybe you'll watch out because you got Lance Stroll coming around the corner here. So, you know, you don't have that much time to get the car turned around. And, I mean, he really only nicked him a little bit, but I mean, it really just ruined you know, things for Lance. But you know, the thing was, you know, Lance skids off, goes into the gravel, comes back, and then almost does the exact same thing to Pierre Gasly that Sebastian Vettel did to him. So that was just a bizarre circumstance. I mean, Stroll got a penalty for that as well, but Vettel, he was you know, the primary suspect, the primary bad guy in that one. So that's why he got the you know, the heftier penalty, and rightfully so. I mean, should he have been black flagged and taken off? I mean, I guess that was open to them. I mean, I think the bigger humiliation was the fact that you know, here's the guy that's supposed to be the man at Ferrari, you know, keeps having these adventures off the track, into the gravel, into the grass, whatever it might be, and then you know, has this embarrassing moment of taking out another car as he's getting the car turned around and back onto the track. It just looks terrible. And by the time he goes into the pits and gets a, you know, new set of tires and gets a new nose cone, I mean, he's right at the back of the you know, the running order at that point. I mean, his day's effectively done. And then eventually, I mean, he is lapped by his own teammate. I mean, the black flag might have actually been merciful. It might have been doing Sebastian Vettel a favor to get him off of the track and out of the situation that he found himself in. Because obviously, being at the very back of the running order at Monza in a Ferrari, not a very good place to be. Anyways, time for another break. We'll be back in just a moment, so don't go away. We'll be back in just a few moments.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Have you ever experienced turbulence on a flight and wondered why?
And you can see all the terrain around you. You've got no issue with visibility or anything?
No, everything's peachy.
Maybe you've sat on the tarmac for hours wondering why your plane isn't moving.
Well, we're outside here. They're saying the ramp is closed. They won't let us park because of Air Force One.
Listen in on the conversations between pilots and air traffic controllers on the Air Traffic Out of Control podcast.
510 is declaring an emergency. There's smoke in the cabin. I need to make a landing right now on 31 left.
We have the most interesting, wild, and funny ATC recordings you will ever hear. Check out Air Traffic Out of Control wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
All right, welcome back to the show. And guys, again, it's NFL season. I really enjoyed opening weekend. I mean, we had games Thursday night, Sunday, Monday. You know, it's just great. You know, there's NFL on all the time. So remember, if you're going out to check out a game this week, head on over to the Vivid Seats mobile app, and you can save up to $100 on all ticket purchases for first-time customers only by using the promo code OVERTIME. So remember to go and check that out. Certainly, you know, I'm looking forward to the next the next weekend of the NFL coming up here in a couple of days. It's an off weekend for Formula One. We've got Singapore coming up, and that's always one of my favorite races of the year. It's one of the most physically demanding tracks on the entire calendar. And for some reason, I thought way back when they introduced night races into Formula One, I always thought it was a little bit gimmicky, to be quite honest. But they've grown on me. Well, I mean, honestly, I felt I was proven wrong, at least in my own mind, almost right from the very beginning. And I've just come to be a big fan of night racing and Formula One, and really enjoy the Singapore Grand Prix. So looking forward to that coming up just in a week's time. So we were talking about Vettel and Leclerc and all the naughty things that have been going on at Ferrari and some of the things on the track. But like I say, I mean, Sebastian, where do you go? Because I mean, even Ross Brawn, he's talked about this a couple of times over the season so far. And Brawn, I mean, obviously one of the greats at Ferrari when they were so dominant in the late 90s and early 2000s, he says it's essential that Ferrari rebuild Sebastian Vettel's confidence for 2020. And this is in response to the latest incident that Seb had at the Ascari curve at Monza just over the weekend. And Ross says, and I quote, "Vettel's clearly one of the greats of our sports, but at this tough time, he really needs the support of the team to regain the confidence he seems to be lacking at the moment. That, as well as pushing the car on with the car development, has to be a priority for Matteo Bonato in the coming weeks. It won't be easy, but especially essential in terms of 2020. And that is, a great point. And that's why, you know, I really have to wonder what's going to happen there for Sebastian Vettel. I would hate to see him go. I would like to see whether or not he'd be able to win a world championship for Ferrari and maybe catch up a little bit in terms of overall titles with Lewis Hamilton. But, you know, my heart says one thing, but my brain tells me something else. And I really get the feeling now that if somebody wins a championship at Ferrari, it's more likely to be Charles Leclerc than Sebastian Vettel. But talking now a little bit about Mercedes, they said that they weren't holding back the engine despite some of the problems that they've had with the new spec, which is their Phase 3 engine. And it was a little bit, there was some concerns with with the engine that they introduced at Spa about almost 2 weeks ago with Sergio Perez and Robert Kubica having problems with their customer units. So, you know, Perez obviously in the Racing Point and Kubica in the Williams. So they said before the race, they were unsure if they would be able to be comfortable enough to unleash the full potential of the new power units because they did have some problems with them. But they did go on to say that Toto Wolff said that they didn't hold anything back. So that really is surprising. I mean, considering how dominant Mercedes have been at times over this year, at Spa and at Italy, at Monza last weekend, that they didn't have the best package. And it's interesting when you hear little tidbits, little nuggets of information come out like that, especially from the big boss, from Toto Wolff, to say that they aren't holding the things back. And then Wolff goes on to say, and he's just quite blunt and very forthcoming about it, that they just did not have the right package for Spa or Monza. But, you know, let's be fair about it. We did talk about it on this show that a couple of weeks ago, that just based on the differences between the W10 and the Ferrari SF90, was that the Mercedes is a better rounded, better car that's suited to a more variety of situations, more tracks, where Ferrari, they have that straight line speed, but they don't have the downforce, and it really affects them in the cornering. and also doesn't help them generate enough downforce to get the temperature and the heat into the tires. So it's a kind of a double whammy there that that they're really fighting against. But honestly, this was something that we said on the show, that that if Ferrari were going to win any races this year, until, well, I mean, up until Hungary, I mean, it looked like that they weren't going to be winning a race at all, period. I mean, it looked like at least going into the summer break, that the one race that they had the chance to win was way back in Bahrain, but they had the problems there, which cost Charles the victory. And up until Spa, I was really thinking that might have been the one opportunity that they had to win a race this season, was in Bahrain, and maybe they're going to have a year where they don't get up on the top step. But for Spa and Monza being the tracks that they are, they were always going to be the two legit choices or options or races, whatever you want to say, that that would be more favorable to Ferrari. And you got to give Charles Leclerc credit, because he really stepped up and took took the advantage. Advantage that he had, and translated that and helped him win two races. But it is interesting to see Mercedes talking about being at a bit of a disadvantage, being a little bit of a deficit to someone else, when it's usually everybody trying to catch up to them. So it is they do have some work coming up. But I looking at the races that we have left, I mean, it's possible that Ferrari could maybe win another race here or there at the end of the season. Maybe Max Verstappen fancies his chances somewhere else. But apart from Spa and Monza, I'm not really sure where the SF90 might be well suited with the races that are left on the calendar. But they at least got a couple of wins. It's not great considering that the way that they progressed over the past couple of seasons. But at least by the time it's all said and done in November, that at least they're not going home empty-handed. So it's something. And maybe it's these past couple of races just are maybe a couple of stepping stones that help Ferrari get it turned around, get the ship pointed in the right direction, and help start making some positive steps to finish 2019 on a positive note and rebuild and set up a good foundation for 2020. Of course, they got to get the design and the concept of the new car for 2020 a lot better. And it'll be interesting next year to see where they go and what philosophies and how they design the new car based on the lessons of 2019 and, maybe not so much 2018. Anyways, McLaren, remember them? They've had a pretty darn good year so far. I mean, they're still fourth in the world championship, but let's be honest, Monza was not a great weekend for them. Carlos Sainz ended up not finishing the race because the right front tire did not go on correctly at his pit stop. So he goes out on the track and then he has to park the car. And then on top of that, the self-inflicted DNF of Carlos Sainz is just added to the fact that they also get nailed with a fine for an unsafe release from the pit lane, and rightly so. But it was disappointing because, I've talked about it, a number of times over the course of the season so far, and McLaren have been, for me, I wouldn't say a revelation, but certainly this year they have made a lot of steps, promising steps in the right direction for the first time in a number of years. I mean, they're still quite a long ways off challenging for podiums and for race victories, and I don't think that's unfair assessment or characterization of what's going on there. But, I mean, they have been going in the right direction. I mean, they really have been the best of the rest of the rest. I mean, if Red Bull are the best of the rest, then McLaren have been the best of the rest of everyone else. And, the rest of which is basically 5/8 of the rest of the Formula One grid. But, I mean, they've had some good results this year, but Monza was a disappointing one for them. I mean, like I say, losing one of your cars because of a bad pit stop and not getting a tire properly secured is just a little bit embarrassing for for them. But I think that they'll bounce back. They seem to finally have a lot of good people in the right jobs at McLaren, and they're getting it sorted out slowly but surely. And it'll obviously be one that they want to put behind them and forget about. I mean, they only got 1 point, and that was brought to them by Lando Norris, who came home in P10. So McLaren, work to do for the rest of the season. And talking about another team with Renault, and that's the Renault Works team rather than the customer team like McLaren, they said that the results that they had in Monza, which was P4 and P5 for Ricciardo and Hülkenberg respectively, they said that after that result, it made Formula One feel like a different sport. And obviously, I mean, that P4 and P5 for Renault was very much for them, at least from their perspective and their context, was winning fourth and fifth was just bringing their cars home one and two for a race win, because it's been a bit of a struggle for them this year. And it was always going to be a gamble, obviously, for Danny Ricciardo to go there. And I mean, I'm still can vividly remember exactly where I was just over a year ago when the announcement came out on Ricciardo's Twitter that he decided to leave Red Bull and go to Renault for 2019. So that was the big shocker. But I always felt that there must have been like one massive bit of sweet talking and convincing to get him to go and drive for Renault after, he had a successful stint at Red Bull, was able to win some races and get some podiums. And, he's been obviously a very good driver there, but it was very, very risky. And unfortunately, it had been put out that it was not working out to his, best advantage. It really looked like, up until at least till Monza, that it didn't look like a great move, and that it just really made it look like it was, I wouldn't say maybe a desperation move, but looked like a move that he just wanted to get away from Red Bull and get away from the shadow of Max Verstappen and go somewhere else instead. So, it is promising for them, but they got their like a new spec engine in the car that they used, and whether or not they'll be able to do something with it, they have to get some positive momentum. I mean, if Ferrari needs positive momentum for 2020, then they do as well, because they've really stagnated over the past year and a half, maybe 2 years, despite all the things that they've said publicly. They've increased their budget and they've hired more people and they're doing all these things right off of the track, and that you'll hear over different points in the season that they think that their engine is now one of the top ones in Formula One, whatever it might be, and all these different things. But it just has not translated into any success on the track, and it is sad to see. I mean, to a certain extent, I think that they got a good pair of drivers there with Ricciardo and with Nico Hülkenberg, so they got the talent to get some points. I mean, at this stage that they're at right now, I mean, I would think that they have to be targeting, like, say, top five finishes and maybe the occasional podium. I mean, I think that would be ideal for them. I mean, they'd have to make almost a quantum leap in the development of their car and engine if they figure that they can get up and really challenge like Ferrari and Mercedes and Red Bull. I mean, Red Bull has really grown under Honda. I mean, that's why it's disappointing to see Max struggling the way he was in at Monza this past weekend. But it is a step in the right direction, but it's something that they really need to perpetuate and take it forward, because they do have their struggles. They do have some things going on, and we'll talk about that in just a moment here on Scuderia F1 on the Overtime Media Network. Don't go away. We'll be right back. All right, welcome back to the show here on the Overtime Media Network. Once again, it's Mark Daly talking about Formula One here on the podcast, and we're coming to you again this week from the Vivid Seats studio. And going back to Renault, like we were just talking about before the break here, obviously a great result for them in Monza last weekend, in a season that really hasn't been anything to write home about, and it was a great result. But like I was saying, they have to do something to keep it going. It looks like this new spec engine looks promising, and something hopefully for them to build on. But on the financial side, and this is a little bit disappointing to see, but you know, maybe not that much of a surprise considering all the money that they've really put into the team and investing in more personnel and development and all those sorts of things, and a bigger budget. However, they still posted a £7.4 million loss for 2018. So they generated more income in 2018 than they did the year before, and the new records for their accounts show that their annual turnover rose from £136.3 million in 2017 to £146.6 million last year. So the figure that for last year was bolstered in part from the ninth place finish in the 2016 World Championship to six in 2017, and then the benefits were felt again the year after. They had a modest profit of £1.1 million in 2017, but then that became a obviously a bigger loss, being you know, £7.4 million in the red last year. So Renault was saying that the part of the reason for that was the weak pound, and I guess maybe those of the UK can maybe understand this a little bit more. So maybe Brexit has something to do with that. And they were said that they noted, despite that the continued growth in turnover, financial results have deteriorated for the first time in 3 years, and they say that was primarily driven by two factors. So that the first was the expected turnover that was negatively impacted by the strength of the British pound versus the euro and the US dollar, and then the extra resources that that were added in season to car development as the team really battled for fourth place. So I mean, that worked out last year. I mean, obviously they finished fourth in the World Championship, and this year it's not over. I mean, they did not score a whole heap of points between the Canadian Grand Prix and Monza last weekend. I think off the top of my head, I read somewhere over the past couple of days that it was something like 15 points from Montreal to Spa. So that is not a lot. But then they got 22 points between the pair of them last weekend. So if they have a couple more weekends like that, then they will be all over the back of McLaren, perhaps even in front of them in the World Championship. And that could be a bit of a fun side story to watch as we go into the stretch run here in the Formula One 2019 World Championship. I mean, all eyes are going to be on what Charles Leclerc doing. Is he really going to be the new rock star in Formula One? Is he going to be the new number one guy at Ferrari? So I mean, that's going to be a fun story to watch. It'll be fun to watch Lewis Hamilton and see how long it takes him to win the world championship this year. I mean, it's obviously a foregone conclusion he's going to win at this point, but it's still going to be able to watch as he hones in on his sixth world championship, which will put him one off a tie of seven with Michael Schumacher. So that's going to be a fun one. But outside of those big storylines, watching the battle between Renault and McLaren might not get a lot of the headlines, but I think that's one we should watch out and see what goes on over there over the next couple of months. Now, talking about teams that have posted losses, this should not be a surprise, but Williams has posted a loss. So they said that they generated £46.3 million from January to June, compared to £60.7 million last year. And then they have also posted a loss of £16.8 million, which was after they posted a profit of just £0.2 million in the same time last year. So I mean, there were some of these things were offset by their sister company in the Williams group, which is Williams Advanced Engineering. And I mean, just looking at the way that they're struggling in Formula One, and the fact that, you know, I can't remember last year how many world championship points they had. I mean, they got one this year. I mean, they didn't get more than a couple at most last year, so they're not getting the benefit of those payments. I mean, plus all the money that they're putting into developing the car has to come more from sponsorships and the money that they're getting from other areas rather than the prize money from Formula One. So that was not a big shocker to see that that Williams had posted a loss. I was more surprised that Renault had, but obviously that was due to a couple of factors we talked about. But the struggles for Williams continue both on and off the track. Now, talking a little bit more about other Grand Prix, I mean, we all know that we got the biggest Formula One season in history coming up next year. 2020 is going to see 22 Grand Prix for the first time in history. I mean, it's going to be great. There's going to be a lot of back-to-back race weekends, which is something that's awesome. I still love the one that we had last year, the back-to-back-to-back. What was it? France, Britain, and Germany all in the space of 3 weekends. I know that kind of really pushes resources and bodies to the limit as the teams and drivers and everybody basically goes into survival mode to go through something like that. But it was exciting. I mean, I'd love to see that again, but I realize it's a real real logistical undertaking to get that done. So I'll be perfectly satisfied with a bunch of back-to-back weekends. But anyways, Imola and Mugello in Italy, they're both weighing up potential bids to get Formula One in the future. And Monza, of course, that was some of the news that came out just prior to the race there, has announced that they have a new multi-year deal, which goes for, I think it was 5 years, I think goes up to 2025. So great to see that Monza will be on the Formula One calendar, at least for the medium term here coming up in the future. So Imola, of course, has been on the Formula One calendar before, hosting the Grand Prix or the San Marino Grand Prix there over the years, and it needs to get to FIA Grade One status to host a Formula One race. But that's after they've been undergoing some development work there, and that included cutting the final chicane. And the last time they hosted a race there was over a decade ago, and that was 2006. So Mugello is a MotoGP venue, and they've never had a Formula One race there, although it's they've had testing there, and the most recently was in 2012. So can we add more races there? I don't know. I mean, from what I've been reading over the past couple of months or so here, as the new schedule for 2020 was sort of hashed out and races were confirmed, or in the case of, say, Vietnam, added to the calendar for the first time, it really sounds to me like 22 is pretty much the max. I mean, I've heard that perhaps maybe go up to 23, so I don't know whether or not we could manage to squeeze one more in or not. So we'll see. Anyways, sticking with talking about names and drivers from the past, there's a report that came out of La Parisienne that 7-time world champion Michael Schumacher has been receiving hospital treatment at in Paris, meeting with a real specialist there that has pioneered some stem cell therapy to treat heart failure. So that sounds somewhat ominous and not good for Michael Schumacher. Obviously, Michael has been out of the public eye for over half a decade now, since having a really nasty accident at skiing at the Mirabel ski resort in France way back in 2013. And nobody's really ever known what the true extent of his injuries were. I mean, his condition has been a closely guarded secret by his family. I mean, his agent occasionally has things to say and gives some brief updates, but they tend to be somewhat brief and somewhat short and vague on the amount of material in them. So it I don't know what there is to the story, but it sounds like it's credible. So I'll hope that 7-time world champion Michael Schumacher is in good health, and hope that we hear something positive about him sooner rather than later. And finally, Pirelli is getting ready for the last 2020 tire test of the year, but has been asking for more time. And that will go down at Circuit Paul-Ricard on Thursday next week, and this will give them the last chance to test its 2020 prototype tires. And well, they've asked for more time because there was a letter that was sent out, or a target letter for the 2021 tire specs that was circulated last month. And Pirelli has requested extra time or test time to develop it further. So the teams need to agree upon that. So the test will be done by Esteban Ocon and Sergei Sirotkin, who was a Williams driver last year. And Sirotkin will be testing the 2021 prototype 18-inch tires on a Renault Mule car. So it's still interesting to see how that's going to play out. And also the 2021 regs, you know, that's still a little bit of a mystery. I mean, it's been dragging on for... gosh, seems like forever. I mean, we've been talking on it off and on the program here for, gosh, over a year, perhaps a year and a half now already. And it's really coming down to crunch time. But anyways, it'd be interesting to see whether or not Pirelli gets this additional test time that they've asked. And also, it'll be interesting to hear what sort of feedback we get from Sirotkin and from Pirelli after they get that test done, testing the new 18-inch wheels. I mean, we don't know what's going to happen for 2020, but at least we know what's happening with the tires. So look forward to hearing what's going on with that just in a couple days' time. Anyways, that's a good place to leave the program off for this week. I hope you enjoyed listening to the show. It's getting late here in my little studio, and I'm ready to call it a night. It's going to be an early start for me in the morning. Anyways, thank you very much for downloading and listening to the show. If you want to support us, the easiest way is just to head on over to Apple Podcasts or the podcast platform, wherever you download and listen to the show. Leave us a good rating and review. Obviously, we'd love to see 5-star ratings, but that is honestly the easiest way to show your support for the work that we do here. And we'd be very grateful if some of you would go and do that and help us out. Anyways, if you have any questions or comments or feedback, get in touch with me on Twitter at ScuderiaF1 or via Gmail. And Gmail, starting to lose it here, guys. Anyways, email address is ScuderiaF1pod@gmail.com. Anyways, that's a wrap. Thanks for listening. Have a great weekend, guys. We'll talk to you again soon. Ciao.
Thanks for listening to the Scuderia F1 podcast. If you want to get the show notes for this episode, then head over to ScuderiaF1pod.com. Want to get in touch with us? Then email us at ScuderiaF1pod@gmail.com.